Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Highfalutin Ski Bum Podcast. This is number 46. It is your hosts, Brian and Mario. Mario, what's going on?
I can't hear my snare. Oh, no. Okay. Yeah, happy to be back. It's been a while.
Are you happy to be back?
Happy to be well, not happy to be back from my ski vacation, but there's going to be some more fresh powder coming, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's still pretty early in the season, right? It's only March 1st.
Only March 1st.
We're getting there.
We got time.
Yeah, so we just got back from a little place called Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and that's what we're going to be talking about on the podcast today. But you can get all of our information at SkiBumPodcast.com. Hit us up on social media, Facebook.com/SkiBumPodcast, Instagram.com/SkiBumPodcast, and Twitter.com/SkiBumPodcast. See, I changed the order around there. I don't really know why. I was feeling the Instagram because we posted some pretty cool pictures this week from our little old trip. And you guys can check them out. Make some comments. We got a lot of comments and people liking the photos. We posted some pretty cool stuff because we had an awesome time.
We didn't post as many as we expected because we were out exhausted after skiing and skiing all day. It was great.
Yeah, and that's something we're probably going to talk about in a future podcast. Powder Magazine had a whole article about that. Like, how connected do you want to be on the mountain? I know we talked about apps a few months ago. And there are a lot of cool apps where you can find your friends, you can hook up with the people, you can, you know, post everything, your speeds, your terrain, your vertical covered. But how much of that is really that important? Do you really want to be doing that, or do you want to be living in, like, the analog real world where you're experiencing it and not having to document every single thing you do?
Yeah, I'll mention something about the club. It was pretty funny.
Yeah. So, yeah, well, that's another topic for another day. But first things first, as always.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, indeed. The weekly flavor.
I've been missing my weekly flavor, or I had a lot of flavors every day while we were on vacation.
Yeah, we definitely hit it pretty hard.
Yeah, I got to say we did a good job. I'm very, very impressed. So today, I decided to take a little break from normal beer, and went with a Cape Cod, a.k.a. a vodka cranberry.
We got your period or something?
Yeah. That's from that movie, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I don't have my period, as you want to
suggest.
No,
you suggest. Do not. No.
It's actually just a nice drink.
You got a bladder infection?
Yeah. So, yeah, just felt like having that. Didn't want to have any beer today, so.
Yeah, we've been hitting the beer really hard during this the whole run of this podcast, which is almost a year old at this point.
Yeah.
Which is pretty awesome. We'll have to celebrate our one-year anniversary in the next few weeks.
1 year. So what are you drinking?
I am drinking I guess it'd be considered non-alcoholic, even though there is like 0.5% alcohol in here.
So who has their period, is all I'm saying.
It's less of a period as much as it is just needing to detox at this point. It's just been getting out of hand. I am having a GT's kombucha, gingerberry flavored, the Enlightened Synergy. Kombucha, if you don't know, is a fermented drink made with tea, sugar, bacteria, and yeast. Although it's sometimes referred to as kombucha mushroom tea, kombucha is not, I repeat, not a mushroom. It's a colony of bacteria and yeast. Kombucha tea is made by adding the colony to sugar and tea and allowing the mix to ferment.
Hmm.
Believe the hype.
So it's like a yeast infection in a can?
It's kind of like a gingery yeast infection in a can.
Ginger yeast infection.
Well, this one's got ginger flavored, which makes it, it really enhances it. It brings out the yeasty goodness, if you will. I got to tell you, man, the first time I drank one of these, I was like, this is the grossest thing I've ever had in my life. But you kind of get used to it. It's kind of like whiskey. Like, do you remember the first time you had whiskey? You were like, this is gross.
No.
Let's add Coke to it.
I was like, this is pretty good.
Really?
Yeah. I never minded whiskey.
Well, I mean, when I first started drinking, it was always like, you got to add the, you know, the Beam and Coke, the Jack and Coke. You know, I never really wanted to taste the full-onness of the whiskey. Then again, you get older, you don't like the sweet stuff anymore, your palate matures, and you really appreciate all the goodness that goes into making the whiskey.
That's in there.
Yeah. Or you get old and you can't taste it anymore, one or the other. I don't really know.
You just say, I just want to get drunk.
This is complicated and complex, and there's hints of oak and maybe a bit of nougat and caramel. I can't really tell.
You just get tired of picking. You're just like, just give me something.
Is that huckleberry I taste?
Huckleberry.
Mayhaps. So, yeah, so no booze today. Kombucha.
Wow. Booze free.
Yep.
It's happened before.
Yes. not the first time I have partaken in kombucha on the podcast, and probably not the last.
And now that leads us into the ski news.
Ski news! Nothing to do with kombucha in the ski news, that's for sure.
All right, what do we got?
First up, Candide Thauvé. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. He is back, and he is jumping over paragliders, road bikers, in one of those days three. I don't know if you guys have checked this out yet. Pretty much every social media, you know, outlet in the different ski magazines has put this out this week. I think Free Skier, Ski Magazine, Powder, Backcountry, they're all putting it out because it's one of those just, you know, completely ridiculous, crazy ski videos. It's a POV. It's filmed from a point of view.
Right.
Probably, I can't tell if it's a chest mount or a head mount.
Probably chest mount.
Probably, right? The way it's very stable.
Because the head doesn't move around. You're basically seeing from his point of view.
Yeah, and it's showing him, you know, there's a, initially it starts with a news reporter, and then it just shows him, you know, jumping, you know, doing his, you know, skiing and jumping, and then he's actually doing like flips and spins and landing in little tunnels, and then he's jumping over helicopters. He's jumping and crashing into people and taking their horses. He's going over grass and water. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's so awesome. I don't know exactly how much of it is real and how much of it is, you know, CGI or edited.
Well, it looks real, and I wonder if they just change it together and edit, because it looks like they could have, you know, done one part and then stopped it and then done another part. But it all looks like it was real skied, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely incredible. It's really, really cool. And if you haven't checked it out yet,
the helicopter was a little tense.
The helicopter was a little bit nuts. And it's cool, too. Like, whenever he would do a trick, it would go to slow motion.
Yeah.
And kind of really kind of build up the drama in it. But, I mean, the dude is an insane skier. And you should definitely go find a way to check it out. It's everywhere. Just type in Candide, C-A-N-D-I-D-E. Thauvé, T-H-O-V-E-X, and he's got a couple of these videos, but this is called One of Those Days 3, and it makes you realize what a terrible skier you are and what you need to aspire to.
It was pretty cool.
All right, what you got?
Next we got 25 people fall after ski lift derailment in West Virginia.
Oh boy.
So Timberline Resort in Davis, West Virginia had a derailment, caused about 25 people to fall to the ground. And the drop was about 30 feet, according to some people from the resort.
Ugh.
So they said they were pretty lucky, because if it had been higher on the mountain, the chairlift travels about 60 feet above the ground, and they would have had more injuries and potentially fatalities.
West goddamn Virginia.
They said only two people were hospitalized with non-life-threatening issues. So I guess it derailed, but it's not like the whole rope snapped. It's just the wheels derailed it. So the rope dropped a bunch. So that's probably why there's only a few injuries. But that's kind of scary stuff. I think about that every time I get on a lift. But,
that's really scary. Yeah, because a lot of times, you know, we always play the little game where when the lift stops, you're like, okay, could I survive getting off this lift if it doesn't start up again? And there's some times where it's like, oh, you know what? I'm 10 feet above it. There's a little bit of snow. I can probably just jump out. No big deal. Then there's times where you're 70, 80, 100 feet above the ground.
Or you're in Telluride and you're on the two-person lift that's going up really steep with no restraining bar. That's a little terrifying.
Whatever the name of that road is.
That was the Coon lift.
Is that what it's called?
Coonskin or Coon lift.
Yeah, that one is ridiculous. Wasn't there one dude on a trip who wouldn't go on it because he was like too scared?
Yeah, he wouldn't. He's like, screw that, I'm not going on. So we all just left him and we're like, all right, see you later.
That was a smart move on our part.
Yeah.
I'm looking up right now. It is called not the Free Gondola.
Right next to it.
The Coonskin lift. No, it was the Oak Street lift.
Oak Street. Okay.
Yes, that's Coonskin
is a quad, right?
Coonskin, I think, is a quad. Yeah, that one crosses the gondola.
Okay. Yeah, that's another weird thing in Telluride. They got the lifts cross. Like,
yeah.
I think we saw that in Austria, too, which is a little strange.
Big time.
Yeah.
Everything crosses there,
it's crazy.
Yeah, but it said this article regarding the Timberline lift. It was the first time in the resort's 30-year history they've had a lift failure resulting in an injury in any way, which is crazy. I mean, that's obviously a very good track record, but not good for the people involved this time. But you know what? It could have been a lot worse.
Well, also, as long as there were no fatalities, they said non-life-threatening injuries, so you know.
And you know what? They probably got a free season pass out of it.
Maybe a free day's lift ticket.
I don't know. I don't know.
They got a free lawyer to represent them.
You're dropping 30 feet?
Yeah.
Stuck in there for 2 hours?
There's a free lawyer representing them, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, you're probably right. Just a lift ticket.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Bastards. Next up, in the same vein, boy 11 left dangling off ski lift for 7 minutes before plunging 30 feet into rescuer's arms.
Wow.
So this was sent to me by our friend Ben, who we skied with a few weeks ago. Thanks, Ben. Hopefully you're listening. Thank you for sending this over. Tristan Steed was bending over to grab one of his ski poles at Canada's Whistler Resort when the chairlift suddenly picked him up. This was a terrifying moment as the 11-year-old boy was left dangling from a 30-foot ski lift for up to 7 minutes.
Wow.
So the video, it shows, you know, it's not far from the lift station, but it got, I guess it went up pretty high when it left the lift station. So you, excuse me, you see this boy kind of dangling.
Now what happened? He got caught?
I guess he was bending down to pick up his pole and then got hit. So I don't know if maybe he got hit and then someone was holding on to him.
Or he was, yeah, that's wild.
Yeah. His aunt and uncle were with him on the lift, immediately started shouting at the operators who shut the machine down. The employees then ran over to the space directly below Tristan, whose relatives were desperately gripping onto his arms. So they were kind of holding him up.
Don't let me go, man.
There, the operators called on half a dozen skiers to help them stretch a tarp tightly beneath the youngster so he could drop to safety.
Oh, they did the old fireman's parachute thing.
Yeah, pretty much.
Nice.
They then counted the three. They counted to three before Tristan, who was starting to slip through his clothes, plunged a staggering 32 feet onto the tarp.
Wow.
Yeah.
Get that boy some hot cocoa and take a nap. That's about it.
Right? That's crazy. Yeah, there's video of that. We'll post that video footage. But, you know, it makes me wonder, like, did the kid, is he going to like skiing more because of the fall? He may be like, you know what? That fall of 32 feet was pretty exhilarating. I may become a freestyle skier now.
Well, I like just how in skiing you have everybody's very crafty. So they have like, oh, we got a tarp. Everybody grab it and we'll make like a something for somebody to drop into. I'm like, that's pretty cool. I would have never thought about that, you know?
Yeah.
These guys are like, yep, we got that at our disposal when we need it.
It's good they had the tarp.
Yeah. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, they made it happen, and they saved this kid, and yeah, he'll probably be back skiing now because he thought, wow, that was really, really sweet. I want to do that again.
I want to do it again.
That was fun.
So then we have a book that just came out called Fall Line, How American Ski Racers Conquered a Sport on the Edge. So it talks about the original extreme sport of downhill ski racing, and they talk about the most powerful forces, elite downhillers descending icy, rugged slopes at speeds cresting 90 miles per hour. For decades, American skiers struggled to match their European counterparts, and until this century, the U.S. ski team could not claim a long-lasting foothold on the roof of the Alps where the sports legends are born. So, you know, this comes on the heels of, you know, Lindsay winning World Cup for her event. A lot of U.S. downhill skiers and just U.S. skiers in general are starting to take home medals. So we've become very competitive in a European-dominated sport. So,
yeah, the first gold medalist in U.S. – the first U.S. Olympic gold medalist in downhill was 1984, Bill Johnson in Sarajevo.
And who was after that?
Oh, 1994, a fella named Tommy Moe.
That was Lillehammer?
That was Lillehammer.
And
we know him as our ski guide, backcountry ski guide in Jackson Hole, Wyoming.
I believe so.
Yes, I believe we do. Which leads us into...
So that's going to lead us into...
Dun, dun, dun.
Now we're going to talk about Backson from Jackson.
Backson from Jackson. Yes, we are back from Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and that was a nice little, sort of nice little segue into it. Yes, we talked about it on the last podcast. We were getting prepared for it. We were getting psyched up for it. Our last podcast was called Coffee is for Corbiters. Now, I just drank coffee, but...
You didn't earn it.
I did not earn that coffee.
You didn't earn it. Yeah.
Neither did you, though, so...
Hey, I came to grips with it before we even got there, and then once we got there, we saw... a bunch of people try it. We saw one guy literally lose his ski after the first drop in and basically slide down about 300 feet.
Probably wasn't quite that far. It's probably about 100 yards. So about 200 feet maybe. Yeah.
100 yards is 300 feet.
100 yards. I meant about 100 to 200 feet. It wasn't that far.
It was pretty far.
It was far, yeah.
Anyway, he gets up and he has to go get a ski then. And everybody's clapping. And so I think that kind of sealed the deal for me saying, yeah, maybe not this trip.
Yeah, and when you looked at it, I mean, it's obviously terrifying when you come up the tram and you see it right there. But there was a little bit of snow before we got out there, but there wasn't enough snow to cover up the giant rock that was right there when you dropped in.
It didn't look that bad. I mean, the drop in, what, 6 feet, 7 feet, and then you got to turn, make a few turns, and then it's okay. The problem is if you make one little mistake, you're just flying down that mountain. It's a no-fall zone. So that was kind of the intimidating factor. I was like, I think I could do it, but it's that chance that if I have one little slip-up, I'm kind of effed.
And those rocks. Those rocks did not look good at all.
And that dude barely missed the big rock and the bottom.
The bottom of the rock, yeah.
The bottom of the rock.
Yeah. So, yes, friends and listeners, I'm not saying we chickened out. I'm just saying we did not get to check that off of our list.
I'm saying we chose wisely.
We chose wisely. Yeah. And as we mentioned, our backcountry guide, Tommy Moe, we asked him, I'm like, have you skied it this year? He said, I haven't even skied it this year. The conditions haven't been right.
I agreed with him.
And if you go on to onthesnow.com, there is a Tommy Moe's guide to Jackson Hole, Wyoming, because he's lived there since 94.
Nice.
Since he won the gold medal. And that's his favorite run on the mountain, and he hasn't done it this year.
Wow.
So that tells you something.
Yeah.
So we were hanging with Tommy, and he didn't do it, so neither did we.
Yeah, so we did our it was actually our side country day we did with Tommy Moe. It was back side country, more side country than anything, and it was great. It was the first time we side countryed, and it was a lot of fun. You know, had the avalanche gear on, went with him, kind of skipped the lines on the tram, which was fun.
Yeah, we were on a tram with about, you know, between our group, there was five of us plus Tommy, and then there was maybe, what, five or six other tour guides and lift operators. We were on the tram, which is usually jammed with 100 people.
Yeah.
And there was maybe 12 of us.
It was awesome.
That was really cool.
Yeah. Just rode up, hung out with Tommy all day, talking about his life, talking about just skiing. He was giving us pointers. It was great.
Just a really knowledgeable dude and an amazing skier. Like, just watching him just effortlessly ski. I mean, it was just beautiful. Like, it was beautiful to watch him ski. He was super cool, super friendly. We were joking around with him. He ate some of my beef jerky.
Yeah. We were trying to chase him down the mountain for a few runs, which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun that day.
Yeah, that
had
was a blast.
Had some awesome mountain waffles.
Yes.
At the top of Corbett's Cabin.
If you get up there, get one of the waffles. You had the peanut butter bacon one, right?
Peanut butter bacon.
Yeah, that was so good.
The maple sugar brown butter looked good, too.
And there was a lemon one, too, right? Wasn't there?
Ah, lemon. Who meant that?
I didn't want that either. I had the peanut butter bacon one as well because it was the best one.
Yeah.
The one had the pulled hammy, which sounded pretty good, too.
So what do we talk about?
That was ham and cheese.
The mountain
waffle.
Mountain food. So the waffle place was great.
We're starting with food, huh?
Start with food. That's where our heart is.
That's what we do best.
That's right.
Yes.
Corbett's Cabin, the pulled hammy, that was awesome. What was on that?
Pulled hammy, that was the 50th anniversary waffle they had.
Ooh.
I believe it was ham and cheddar on the waffle.
You can only get that every 50 years, so.
Every 50 years. So if you're going to get it now.
Pulled hammy. So that was good. So on mountain, there is that. That was delicious, and we actually did that for lunch because we're like, we don't want to break. We'll just eat a waffle, power bar, and just get the hell out of there.
Yeah.
Some beef jerky. And that worked out good. Then we ate at Casper restaurant.
Casper, yes, which that would be my recommendation for my favorite dish that I had on the mountain. The Casper Lodge there, they had a pulled pork sandwich with homemade barbecue sauce, coleslaw, bun, and you get it with a salad or fries. Got the salad. Needed to get those greens. Ate a lot of meat on this trip. That was my favorite single thing I had on the mountain. It was delicious. The pulled pork was great. The sauce was great. The slaw was great. The salad hit the spot. So
I had Kobe beef tacos that day.
And how were those?
They were awesome. Awesome. I had tacos like 3 days in a row.
Was it your favorite food on the mountain that you had? Besides the waffles. That sounds like a different category.
I would say, yeah, besides the waffles, that was probably my favorite. They had a solid selection there. They had pulled pork. They had chicken, beef, and some vegetarian thing, which who eats that? Chili was good there.
Chili was pretty good. Yeah, the On the Mountain dining, I mean, it was really expensive, and there wasn't a ton of options. Like, even the gondola, at the top of the gondola, the lodge there, I mean, it's a lot of sit-down stuff. You know, there was the big restaurant downstairs. There was a big restaurant upstairs.
Well, upstairs was the cafeteria, which was
It took us until the last day to figure out.
Yes. And that was good. You had the noodle bowl.
Where you can kind of, you know, get the noodles, you can choose your meats, you can choose your vegetables, and they throw it on there with the broth. Which is, if you want to fill yourself up and get warm, it's a solid selection.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I just got the chili there and the fries because I felt like eating like a four-year-old.
Being a fatty?
Eating like a four-year-old. Why not?
Yeah.
But, we didn't eat at any restaurant, sit-down restaurants on the mountain.
That just takes too much time.
They had, what was the other one? In the...
the little cafe we ate at the first day.
Yeah, that was the top of the gondola, the Bridger Gondola, top of that one. That little cafe was pretty cool. They actually had some pretty healthy stuff, decent pizza.
They had like a pizza. It was like a thick pizza, almost like a Sicilian kind of pizza, but with like vegetables on there. They went with meat on there.
I got the salad one. It was like cold salad on it.
Yeah, they had a quinoa salad and some vegetables and hummus. So they had some healthier options, which was kind of nice.
Yeah, that wasn't bad.
But I know all ski resorts are expensive when it comes to food. I feel like this was extra expensive, it seemed like.
Yeah, I mean, like
the whole mountain.
So, like I told you, when I went to Tremblant, like all the stuff there was just like bad food, fried, just cheeseburger, poutine. Like there was nothing good on the on the menus there, mm-hmm. and it seemed like it all came from like the same truck, just at different restaurants.
Yeah,
and they changed around a little. Whereas here, you definitely got the feel like, okay, they actually put something into making the food because they had the noodle bowl was nice. They had, some nice cafe sandwiches, things like that. So,
and they definitely catered to a higher clientele there, too, at Jackson. I mean, that place is – the real estate around there is ridiculously expensive.
It's nuts.
Everything is crazy expensive. So that's the kind of, market they're catering to.
Yeah, we're looking all week for something, in the $500,000 range and – there basically isn't anything that exists around anywhere.
You can almost get land for $800,000.
Yeah, it was crazy.
There was like we were looking at Trulia, of course, to see what was available. In the town of Jackson, there was a dumpy 3-bedroom bungalow for close to $1 million.
And if you own that little bungalow, it was great because it's in Jackson. we're not downplaying it, but
location,
it was tiny.
Location, location, right?
Oh, yeah. It was like tiny. It was from the 50s. It was expensive.
Yeah. There was a suite on mountain condo, kind of at the base, the Hotel Terra, I believe it's called. So it's if you're looking up at the mountain, it's to the left of the tram. 3-bedroom, 3-bath, top floor condo, $1.6 million.
Damn.
Crazy money.
So pretty much in Jackson and Teton Village, real estate's very expensive, but...
very, very expensive.
I mean, Tommy was even saying he used to be in Teton Village, he moved out. Just a little
Wilson,
bit
I think, yeah.
Wilson.
Which is one of the next towns over.
And it seems a lot of people are moving, out to Wilson.
Yeah.
Because it's not that far, and I guess real estate's a little bit better. And if you lived in Jackson or Teton Village, you probably sold your place and made a ton of money anyway. So
So we're actually going to open a new service, the Highfalutin Ski Bum house-sitting service. So if anyone has a house in the wintertime they need to be, sat in and maintained and taken care of, please hit us up at skibumpodcast@gmail.com because we are going to be offering our services. And we don't do the summer. We only do the wintertime. But,
so if you like being there for the summer, that's perfect. You go for the summer, and then we'll hang out and make sure it's all taken care of and well-maintained in the winter.
Make sure no pipes burst. We'll clear the driveway.
Exactly.
We make sure the gutters are okay.
Getting a delivery. Sure, we'll be around.
Make sure the grill works and the pool's okay.
That's right.
We can do this.
We can do that.
We're great. And our fees are pretty low. So, please hit us up.
Nominal fees.
skibumpodcast@gmail.com.
So let's talk about the hotels.
Well, before that, so we're talking about food still.
All right.
Mountain favorite après place on the mountain?
The only place I liked, really, because food-wise, there's some decent food at all the places, but atmosphere and a nice après, I thought, was at the Four Seasons, the...
Handlebar,
yeah.
Hmm.
That was nice. They had the outside you could sit in. They had the inside, which was really kind of cool. Really depends who you go with.
That place was, it reminds me a lot of the place we went to in Telluride at the bottom there.
Yeah.
Right by the top of the gondola in the village, in Mountain Village there.
Right.
I didn't like the handlebar, I'll be honest. Their Glühwein was overpriced and it sucked.
You got the Glühwein. I would never get the Glühwein there.
You think someone's going to be able to do Glühwein, right?
They had the Austrian place, which maybe would have been able to do a good Glühwein.
Well, I'm just saying, based on their Glühwein, their overpriced, shitty Glühwein, I gave the handlebar a thumbs down.
Hey, I drank a boot. I drank a boot of beer. That was fun.
You did drink a boot of beer.
And that was after hanging out with Tommy. So yes. It was a good day.
That's true. Yeah.
How about you?
My favorite after place was the Mangy Moose. I liked their beer selection. They had the Snake River Paco, the IPA, which was really good. And their nachos were quite delicious.
Yeah.
We destroyed. That was actually after Tommy. We ate the nachos there.
Oh, we ate the nachos there and then went over to Handlebar.
No, we went back home. I don't think.
I thought we. Ah, that's right.
Yeah. But yeah, I like the moose. I like the environment. They always had cool bands playing. They're, good food, good beer. That was my favorite place on the mountain.
The thing I didn't like about the moose is always so crowded.
It's because it's awesome.
Yeah, but it's like, it's not an open, like, the handlebar is a little more open,
mm-hmm.
whereas the moose is just kind of packed in. The other Nick Wilson's, that was a little,
pretty small.
It was small. I mean,
the outdoor part was nice.
In general, all the restaurants in Jackson, on the mountain, off the mountain, they all seem very small that we went to. There wasn't any, we were with a big party, we were with a big club, and they couldn't even, we had problems getting places to host us to all eat at one time for like a group dinner.
Yeah.
So it was, something to be said about the town though, everything's nice and quaint, but if you go with a big group, you're definitely going to split up and do your own thing.
And that's the way to do it too. I mean, the fact that you want to do something with 40 people is ridiculous. What, are you a cult? Come on.
Well, you're a ski club, so you have at least one meal together.
Yeah.
Maybe two.
Maybe two. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, breakfast together almost every morning.
Yeah, that everybody's coming in and out.
That's
times.
Good, though. That's how it should be. You can't, 40 people together is madness.
That's because you're antisocial.
I am antisocial. I'm totally comfortable with that. All right, so now we're going to what? Favorite restaurants?
Yeah, why don't we just keep going?
We're sticking with food and drink. We'll get to the real mountain stuff in a bit. Don't worry.
So that was on mountain. Off mountain, I think my favorite place, Snake River Grill.
Mm.
It's hard to get a reservation there. Call way in advance if you know you're going there, at least like a week or two in advance.
That's a really good tip. Yeah, we had reservations for a lot of places before we even got out there.
Yeah
because, again, you never know if you're gonna have, there's going to be a ski club in town or some sort of event going on. They host a lot of different events, especially the 50th anniversary year this year. There was a lot of stuff going on almost every weekend. So if you do want to, if there's a particular restaurant you want to hit up, yeah, make sure you do it ahead of time. Book your reservation. You can always cancel it, a day in advance or so. But the good spots will always fill up.
And some of them take open table, or you can make reservation online, which is mm-hmm. good. If you have a party of two or four, it's usually a lot easier. You start going out with six or eight. You definitely go over six, and you start having problems like finding a good time because a lot of places just aren't really that big.
Yeah.
So how about you? What was another favorite?
I really like the Snake River, but I also really liked Gather. That's the place that Andrew and I went to. They had this elk bolognese that was like one of their signature dishes that was really, really good. The dessert was awesome. They do these signature Brussels sprouts, like roasted Brussels sprouts with all kinds of seasoning, and I think they had nuts in there that were really, really good as well. And the bar was really very cool, chill vibe. It, you're in this kind of Wild West town. This one had more of kind of a loungy feel to it, less of the Wild West, not like the cowboy bar with the saddles for the bar stools, more of a modern kind of feel. Cool. But it wasn't tacky modern. It fit in still with the with the regular town, but it was different. So food was great there too. So really liked that place.
Then there was Bon Appetit.
Bon Appetit.
So we had a reservation for this place called Tie Me Up, and we were going to go there because there's a brewery inside.
Melvin Brewing, which I think we talked about on the last podcast because we had just booked a reservation for it.
Yes. And then after talking to Tommy, we were talking and he's like, it's a good place, but like this other place is really good. You should probably try that before if you can get a reservation.
Well, I think what he was saying was that at Tie Me Up, they actually have an Asian cook.
Yeah.
And his the actual term he used to describe... Bon appétit.
He was describing bon appétit, and he said it was a little bit...
funky.
Yeah, which is... I guess they try to do a fusion maybe or something, so it's not true Thai.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Bon Appetit, after he told us about that, I looked it up, and they have, I guess the Thai government gave them a certificate of like one of the most authentic places in the U.S.
Nice. Yeah, that's right. We saw that when we walked in.
Yeah, which I don't know if you just write to them and they send you that. I don't know how official that is, but it was kind of interesting to see. I guess people value that as like real Thai food.
Did they send like an actual ladyboy over with the certificate?
Yeah. But it was really good food.
It was really good. And now...
But they close early.
Close at 9 o'clock. So we got that thing at 8:30.
Yeah.
One thing too, if you... I know I love spicy food, but body does not love spicy food. They always do the seasoning, a 1 to 5. I got a 3. That's middle of the road, right? You'd think. I think their scale is more like the Richter scale, where it kind of like multiplies.
Got to go for the 2.
I got the goddamn 3, and I was sweating. Like, it looked like I just jumped out of the Snake River. I was just dripping sweat on
that
3.
That we should have YouTubed. You just sweating, eating food.
I got the shrimp, pineapple fried rice, which again, was delicious. Burn going in. And let me tell you, actually, I won't even tell you what happened the next day. It was...
Let's just say it was bad stuff.
A lot of burning. Feeling the burn.
A lot of bad things.
But delicious. So, yeah. So, apparently, in Jackson, there's like 3 Thai restaurants. Right? There's at least 3.
There's Thai Plate, which is bring your own. Some of the people went to in that group. They said it was actually really good.
Mm-hmm.
There's Thai Me Up, which has the brewery and Melvin Brewery in there. And then there's Bon Appetit, which we went to.
And there's one on the mountain, too.
Yes. The mountain has 1 or 2.
So there's 3 in Jackson and at least 1 or 2 in Teton Village. Do you know how many Thai restaurants Killington has?
0, right?
Goose Egg. 0. None.
It was interesting. No, I guess they get a lot of people that like Thai food, you know, maybe from California or something. I don't know.
I think that could be a possible business venture, is opening a Thai restaurant. What about Casey's Caboose? Convert it into like a...
Thai?
Thai, ladyboy...
Casey's Thai?
Casey's Thai... Turn it into like a Thai restaurant with the Ladyboy show.
There you go.
I mean, who wouldn't come to Killington for that?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I think you know what? There are enough crappy burger places in Killington already. They need something different. They got to shake things up. Flip the script. Ladyboys in Killington.
I'll let you run with that one.
Bang Killington.
Yeah.
Instead of Bangkok, Bang Killington.
Yeah.
I'm onto something. You know this. If you weren't drinking a period juice, you would be on the same wavelength as me.
Look, who's drinking the period juice? Your non-alcoholic period juice.
This is delicious.
You drink your liquid yeast infection.
If you knew how many probiotics were in this kombucha, you would be jealous.
I don't know what you're fighting off, but I guess you came back from vacation. You got shit to fight off.
I got a lot of shit to fight off. There's a lot of germs on that plane.
The hot tub, too.
Mmm.
So Snake River Brewing, I ate there. You didn't eat there. They had a really good burger. Had a buffalo burger there. Excellent. Where else did we eat?
We ate at Cafe Genevieve, and we had some delicious local trout.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, so that's a big tip is that we'll give you is if you're out there, try what's local. They have epic meats out there. Buffalo, elk, trout. You know, those are that's what they do out there. That's what they're known for. It's natural out there. Everything is going to be fresh. It's going to be delicious.
Yeah.
Elk chops. Elk chapo.
Also, you'll find you're going to wind up eating at Picky G's Pizzeria because it's the only thing that's open after 1. And it's a pretty packed place. So you get a not so great, not so bad piece of pizza and call it a night.
I think Pinky G probably owns one of those massive ranches that you drive past going from Jackson to Teton Village.
Yeah.
That bastard's going to be making a fortune. If there is Pinky G, remember the purveyor? Whoever's the purveyor of Pinky G's, you get a $4 mediocre slice of pizza, and there were people lined up.
And they sell beer there and everything, too, so it's kind of interesting.
Beer, yeah.
But they have the pizzeria, and then upstairs from that, they actually have a burlesque show that they put on. It's like an old Western burlesque show that goes on. And then next to that, they have the Rose, which they also own. And that is actually a nice cocktail lounge. They actually make a decent drink there. Pretty expensive, but they have bartenders that actually know what they're doing. making some pretty good cocktails.
Yes, they make good cocktails. They have that cool little menu. The problem is they are not the speediest of bartenders.
Yeah.
So if you're behind someone who's ordering four complicated drinks and they have one bartender on, you know, working at the moment, you will be waiting and you will be getting very annoyed at their stupid drink when all you want is a goddamn vodka and club soda.
Yeah.
That's the only negative there.
Yeah, and a lot of the places, too, they got really busy, and it's kind of just expect that, you know, if you're from, like, a big metro area, you're going to wait a little longer because the people are doing the best they can. It's just, you know, especially when they're slammed, it's, you know.
We're used to, like, New York City where you got, like, six bartenders. They're all coked up. They're all just, like, shaking shit and, like, going over here and making, like, 15 drinks in one time.
Yeah.
Way slower there.
Way different.
You're going to be prepared to wait. But everyone is super friendly. Everyone is super chill.
Yeah. And then there's the good old Gun Barrel Steakhouse and Game House. Steak and Game. So we had the Elk Chapo. The Elk Chapo, which we named the Elk Chapo.
That was good. I had the Buffalo Prime Rib.
Nice.
Which was dynamite.
Yeah, they had good meats there. It was good.
Yeah, was it Venison Bratwurst?
Yeah, venison bratwurst.
That was really good, too.
I'm trying to think what else. They had buffalo carpaccio, which we didn't get. They had that on the menu.
No.
That would have been interesting.
And we got some of our friends who were, you know, a little bit Jersey in their taste. We got them to broaden their horizons and try some elk. And they liked it.
The Snake River Grill. That's where I got the wild boar.
That was awesome. Bacon-wrapped wild boar.
That was good.
That was dynamite. And then that weird pizza appetizer. Was it Asian duck?
It was duck, yeah.
It was like Asian duck pizza.
It was barbecued duck or so, like, yeah. Asian barbecue is strange.
Like a thick, like, barbecue soy sauce almost.
Yeah, it was good.
But it was good, really good. So again, try weird stuff. And it's not even weird. It's just different. Try it because...
Eat local.
Eat local, absolutely. The trout. I was surprised too because that was a group dinner we went to. And, you know, our club is a little bit, you know, Jersey-ish. You know, a little, it's gross, it's weird. I was very surprised, and I was pleasantly surprised. Probably, 80%, 75% ordered the trout.
Oh, yeah.
I was completely blown away by that. I thought for sure they'd be getting the vegetarian...
I'm not really that blown away.
...winter squash manigot.
We're by New York City, Hobo. I mean, there's a lot of good food around us. I mean, they're used to eating well.
Maybe I'm just a pessimist.
I think that's what it is.
Maybe I just think in my head they're all, you know, going to be all whiny about it. But no.
Well, I think we were good.
Yeah, no, people were loving the trout, and it was really good.
So, drinking.
Drinking.
So at our hotel, I got to say, the guys at our hotel, Jesse and I forgot the other bartender's name, they made fucking awesome, awesome drinks.
And what hotel would that be?
That'd be the Rustic Inn Jackson. Inn.
Yes, it's on the main road. Cash Street.
Cash Street.
C-A-C-H-E.
Yeah.
Like, clear your cache in your browser.
There you go. But they made a great old-fashioned. They had they made a penicillin for Harry, who was bombed. they made a lot of good,
shout out to Harry. We know you're listening.
But they made a lot of... And they knew their stuff. I was like, wow, these guys are the real deal.
Well, didn't the one guy say he didn't have the Manhattan on the menu because he couldn't get the Luxardo cherries in time?
Yeah.
It took, 3 weeks for him to get them.
Wow. That's a real deal.
I had a Manhattan there, and he brought out this big old... gross fishbowl of weird high fructose corn syrupy cherries.
The normal cherries that every normal person in the free world gets, except for Brian.
That's what the commoners use. If you go to a real bar with real mixologists, you will get Luxardo cherries.
But if you go to a real bar, you usually get the
if you
the
go to a
bright
bar that serves
cherries.
That happily serves PBR, you will get the shit cherries. If you go to a fancy place that has real beer, you will get the Luxardo cherries.
And you will pay $30 for that.
Every penny. All damn day I'll pay for real cherries. I will judge a bar by what kind of cherries it has for its Manhattans.
Yeah, it's good to know.
The Pinky G's, they had the Luxardo cherries.
I don't think they were home. I don't think they were Luxardo. They were something else. They were good.
They weren't the ghetto ones. They were some sort of maybe homemade ones.
Yeah,
or
I think
or
they
something.
Were a homemade one.
Yeah, they were really good though too.
Yeah, but that was good.
So yes, the bar at the hotel was good. But now, one of the things, again, we were eating local, we were drinking local also. Wyoming whiskey.
Yeah. That was all over the place, too.
Yeah, we were reading about it on the way over. One of the magazines that they had on the airplane, I was reading about it, and it said that I forget who started Wyoming Whiskey, but it's a relatively new company, new distillery. They were able to hire away the head distiller from Maker's Mark a few years back.
Mr. Mark?
Mr. Mark.
Mark.
Mark McGuire. Mark McMaker.
Marky Mark.
Marky Mark. And the Whiskey Bunch.
Yeah, that's right.
So they got the head distiller to work at Wyoming, and it turned out to be a really good product. One of the first things we did when we got there, we had the long plane ride. We were all starving. It was a deli next door to our hotel. We went there. We just bought tons of food. First thing I got was my Wyoming whiskey. And it took a few days to open it, but really good stuff. Yeah, good. You know, it's a bourbon. It's probably kind of similar-ish to a Maker's Mark, which makes sense because that's where the distiller is from. But it had a very, you know, kind of unique taste, very smooth. And they had it all over the place. And I think a lot of the drinks that we were getting, like the Manhattans and stuff, you get with the Wyoming whiskey. Harry, of course, decided to just chug his Wyoming whiskey.
Yeah, he did.
When he got his hands on it.
He did.
But yeah, true professional. And besides that, they do have some local beers there. So we mentioned the Melvin Brewing, which we did not get our hands on, the 2x4. I'm still pissed we didn't go for that.
Yeah, but again, made it over there.
You know, it's casualties of war. That's really what it is. They do have the Snake River Brewing that was all over the place.
That was everywhere.
Everywhere, yeah. At the bars, at the mountains.
It was good to see it on mountain, which Killington should take a page out of that book, is have local beers, a lot of local beers mainly, at your places. Well,
Dos Equis. Isn't that a local Vermont beer?
They sold out to Dos Equis, and they got freaking Dos Equis, and they have...
Sell out bitches.
All that, and then they have like one or two local beers. It's like, really? For Vermont, you should have...
They do okay. They usually have the Long Trail.
They do okay. It depends where you go.
Like, that's true.
If you go to like the place down at the bottom of the mountain, which is the Long Trail place, I think for a while they didn't even have a Long Trail there. They had it in bottles, not on tap or something.
Yeah.
Something weird. I think that was last year. But this year, I think they have it back.
They've definitely stepped it up. I think they just sold out to Dos Equis last year, so they're kind of in that
from Budweiser transition to phase. Dos Equis, they switched.
Yeah. Bastards. But yeah, so everywhere they had the Snake River Brewing
beers. Yeah, it was really cool.
And I mentioned it before, the Paco, if you're into IPAs, that was really good.
Yeah.
I had that in a couple different places.
Yeah, that was nice. And then we went to, we actually made a trip to the Grand Teton Distillery Tasting Room.
Ooh, right in Jackson.
Right in Jackson, right by the square. You go like a block off and it's right there. And you could sample all the, distilled, they had vodka, a bunch of flavored vodkas. They had moonshine. They had their own whiskey. What else did they have? I think that was about it, right?
That was about it. They had two different versions of their vodka.
Yeah.
They had the regular one, like the 80 proof, and their whole thing is they make it from potatoes.
Right.
I think them and Belvedere are like the only big ones that make use potatoes.
Yeah.
And the brewery is actually out of Idaho. So Idaho is known for their potatoes, so that, you know, kind of makes sense. And it was pretty good vodka. So yeah. They had the 80 proof and then the 100 proof.
Right.
The 100 wasn't quite as good. It was a little harsher. But then they had the moonshines. They had the white whiskey.
Huckleberry moonshine.
Huckleberry moonshine.
So apparently if you go to Wyoming to visit Yellowstone or you go to Jackson Hole to ski, I guess what grows wild over there is huckleberry all over the place.
And yeah.
They have huckleberry soap. I actually bought some huckleberry soap.
Oh, did you?
They have lotions. They have vodka. They have everything infused with huckleberry that you can find.
Yeah, we got a huckleberry chocolate bar. It has like the little... huckleberry jam in there, and
nice
at the airport, and then huckleberry tea.
Oh, cool!
Yeah,
they had jam. They had all that stuff.
All kinds of stuff. Yeah,
but it grows like crazy over there. Then how about the bar? So we had Million Dollar Cowboy.
Yes,
it's great if you go with a bunch of friends. We met, you know, the rest of the ski club there, so we were like a group of 40. We could probably go anywhere, and as long as we had enough people show up, it's kind of like a normal feel for us.
Mm-hmm.
So. We were there another time when nobody else was there. It was a little strange. It was more like a pool hall kind of place.
Yeah, they have those, was it six, four or six pool tables right in the middle there.
Yeah.
But, you know, that place is definitely worth checking out. They have the saddles there as the bar stools.
Yeah, that's
which is
pretty cool.
And I guess wasn't the rule, like, if you fall off the saddle, you're out? It means you're too hammered.
Oh, yeah. That's cool.
But, yeah, you definitely see the locals there. You know, yeah. you see a lot of ski bums. But you also see the locals, like cowboy hats, belt buckles, guns. Yeah. You know, that's who's there. Those are the real Wyoming folk.
They Yeah.
And they go out there and they do some drinking.
Yeah. That was a pretty cool place. And then there was a Silver Dollar.
Yes.
Which is in, I forgot the name of the hotel.
The Wat? The Wort? The Wort.
The Wort.
Yeah.
That was a pretty fun place. They actually had a pretty good band when we went, and they had bands a lot of the nights. And I guess somebody was telling us they made it like twice the size than it was last year. So it was a pretty big place, and it was kind of nice. They had tables, they had a dancing area, they had two bars.
That was the first place we went out.
Yeah.
That was the first night we were there.
Yeah, that was
everything was fresh and new.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good. That place, and they call it the Silver Dollar Bar because the bar itself has all these silver dollars
embedded.
Some sort of epoxy, you know, embedded into it, which is pretty cool. The one thing that did suck about that place is, again, they had one bartender on a Saturday night. I mean, they had two bars, you know, one on each end of it. The one in the front where the band was, they had one bartender, and this girl was so overwhelmed. I mean, yeah. It was packed.
She got help by the time we left there.
Finally. I gave her kind of a nice tip because I kind of felt bad for her because, you know, she was super nice and friendly and just trying to hustle. And then,
yeah, she was busting her ass, yeah.
And there we had the High West Double Rye.
High West.
That was a delicious whiskey. They're out of Park City, Utah. But someone told me, well, the guy at the Grand Teton Distillery said that all their stuff is made in Indiana. Their whiskey.
Because it takes a few years to actually get your own product matured in barrels and stuff. So they work with other distillers to get up and running, at least for the first few
years. I don't
want
to hear that shit, though. If I'm drinking High West, I want to think it's coming out of Park City, Utah.
It's all about the Benjamins, yo.
It's all about the marketing, yo. Yeah.
Marketing.
Lie to me. I don't want to hear the truth sometimes, you know? Like the Lady Boys. You don't want to hear the truth.
We should never go into the distillery and start talking to people and asking them, like, oh, so where does this come from? Because they're going to say, it's not coming from here.
He could be lying, too. We don't know this guy.
That's true.
You know,
he could
be a pathological liar.
Well, it's the same thing as, like, you know, they say something's, you know, Kona, for example. There's, like, Kona breweries around. It's not all brewed in Hawaii. You know what I mean?
It would cost, like, $20 a bottle if it was.
Yeah. So, you know, everybody does that. They diversify out and they have it brewed somewhere else. We're talking to, was it a Sip of Sunshine? Lawson's,
yeah.
They do that. They brew in even another state, you know.
Just Connecticut.
Because they have
two roads.
Yeah. Helps them with distribution and taxes, I'm sure, too. You know.
And it helps people from Jersey actually get their hands on it.
There you go.
Which is a benefit to us. We've talked about restaurants and bars. What about the actual mountain itself?
Well, let's dig into the mountain. The meat and potatoes. This is good stuff. I'm going to... We're going to go back into the mountain now.
Yes, mountain. That's the mountain music right there.
It's the mountain music. So the mountain, we had a great time. We got out there, killed it 2 days, took a day off, then went backcountry and killed it another two days.
It felt like goddamn Christmas those first 2 days.
Oh,
I mean, now, if you could get like, two words to describe the mountain, what would they be?
Steep and dangerous.
Eh, that's not bad. I was going to say steep and long.
Yeah.
That's
what she said.
Ayo. I don't know why she's saying steep, but yeah, I mean, the vertical there is over 4,000 feet.
Yeah.
It's one of the top five tallest mountains in North America.
And the shape of the mountain is just everything's steep.
Everything. I mean, the double blues are comparable to some of the steepest stuff at Killington.
Like, we were comparing it to Telluride, and Telluride starts off very steep, and then it'll gradually start leveling out,
mm-hmm.
whereas this just stays the same pitch the whole way, generally. It's definitely serious mountains. And it's one of those places, like, so I was talking to my buddy at work, the guy that used to be the instructor, the ski bum way back, and he was there a long time ago. And I was telling him about the signs that were up, you know, like, you just see, like, a little 8-inch round sign that says danger, cliff, or closed, or whatever. And it's basically, hey, you know what, maybe you could follow this, maybe not. You do whatever you want to do. If you want to kill yourself, we'll let you do it. We're not going to rope it off or have somebody tell you to stop or anything like that. Just read all, you know, be aware of where you are. And there was one area, it was off of the Laramie Bowl, or on top of the Laramie Bowl. And we were looking the first day, and we hadn't skied anything. So we're looking around. Oh, it was actually the second day because we got over there. So we're looking around, and Brian's like, yeah, we could just jump down there. I'm like, no, dude, I'm not going down there because those little signs say, like, cliff or something, and I don't even want to go near that.
That was by Dogface, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Because Dogface led to that traverse, which led to the bowl.
Yeah.
The Laramie Bowl, yeah.
So we decide to keep skiing around it, and then we kind of loop around, And we look up and it's like, yeah, that would have been a 20-foot drop. So it's kind of like...
a drop onto a traverse.
Yes.
Which would not have been good.
Nice flat traverse from a drop. So yeah, there's definitely... it's one of those mountains you really have to watch yourself, but it's a free mountain. You do what you want to do. Like, it's, there's no limits, you know?
It's really that kind of Wild West attitude.
Yeah.
It actually kind of carries on now onto the mountain.
Like, even backcountry and side country, you take the tram up, and then you go out, they have these gates. They were the first ones to use the gates where you leave the resort, and you go into side and backcountry, and you're kind of on your own, but... they actually put a gate there and say, okay, here's the gate. You're going into backcountry now. This is off the resort. Mm-hmm. Do whatever you want to do, you know?
Yeah.
Just be safe, and hopefully, you know?
Yeah, we were lucky there wasn't a whole lot of avalanche warnings at the time. But, you know, we had all of our gear. We had, you know, the shovel, the probe, the beacons. We had a guide with us. Now, if you're going to go backcountry, we know a lot of people in the ski club who are awesome and know everything. So they didn't need a guide. But if you do go out there, please get a guide. It is so worth it. They will take you places you never would have found, would have encountered. But you're with Tommy Moe. That's because we're baller. That's how we do things. Now, he pointed out some really cool things to us. So we reported about a month or two ago about those folks who died at Jackson Hole falling off of a cliff. That run or that area, they call it the Jersey Shore. So you come up to it. It's right outside that first gate, and you ski down, and it looks like amazing terrain. But then all of a sudden, it just drops off.
It's deceiving, too, because it looks like a rolling hill.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like a steep. It just looks like it rolls.
Mm-hmm.
But the way the snow sits on top of it is very prone to avalanche.
And it's like, oh, wow, that's a 60-foot cliff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
That's exactly what happened. People didn't realize that. They didn't have their gear. They didn't have the knowledge. They didn't have a guide. They went over the cliff, and two of them died.
Yeah.
So, yes, please get a guide. Not only, I mean, yes, it'll cost you a few bucks, but the things they will show you, the things you will learn, the places you will go are out of this world. There is so much, like, side country, back country terrain there. Yeah. I think they said the mountain itself, the resort, is 2,500 acres. And the resort is huge. In a week, you won't even ski everything. That's how big it is.
Yeah.
The backcountry is 3,500 more acres.
Wow.
I mean, it's the amount of terrain is absolutely insane. It's so fantastic.
And even if you speak to people and know where to go, make sure you have all your gear. Because they said one of the things they see happening more and more is, I guess, people have this mindset that, oh, I've been skiing here for a while, even the locals, so I'm okay, I know where to go, I'm smart or whatever. And they see people without the backpack, without the shovel, without the probe, without the beacon. They're like, you know... and you could tell, like, even the some of the other locals and the guides are like, they'll say something to people and be like, no, you're making everybody look bad because we don't want to be in a resort where everybody's dying. Because then we're going to have to change all the stuff that we're doing and make it baby-proofed because people don't want to follow the rules.
Going to nerf the mountain, yeah.
You know, so if you want a nice free place to ski, at least do the basics of, you know, of what everybody should do.
That's the one thing that kind of stood out to me is so crazy is that, you know, it does have that Wild West attitude. You can ski almost anywhere you really want to. But again, it's such a high-end luxury resort. Yeah. You know, usually you think of it being more kind of rustic and more kind of, you know, not having... it's almost like a dichotomy that it has there. It has this really badass terrain, but also this really fancy, you know, accoutrements and accommodations and restaurants and stuff.
Yeah.
Those two you wouldn't think would go together, but somehow it does there.
I mean, it says something about the mountain when TGR has their offices right there.
Yeah.
You know, and we actually, so some of the guys that were renegading on the trip, they were actually in the ski club, but one guy lives in Florida now. Another guy lives in Jersey, but he didn't get on the trip because he was going with his buddy. And I met him on the plane because the one guy was on our flight on the way down there. I was like, dude, you're in the ski club. I remember you from the Telluride trip. He's like, oh, yeah, I'm down here. I'm not really renegading with the club. I'm just taking the trip at the same time with another buddy who they wanted to catch up with other people in the club, too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of they timed it that way. But they said they were backcountry. They're really experienced backcountry guys. So they just went backcountry every day. And it was funny. They said they're out there up by Cody Bowl, and they're skiing. And all of a sudden, this person comes up and, you know, is skiing down by them. And they're like, oh, you know, talking to her for a little bit. And like, well, you can go ahead because, you know, we're going to take our time. We don't know this. We're just, you know, going slow and easy right now. And she was like, no, she's like, I'm just chilling out, whatever. You guys go ahead and I'll follow you. So they go down another drop. And then, you know, I guess they're down there getting ready to hike a little bit. And they start talking to her and they find out she was Angel Collinson, who was there for TGR just scouting out some lines that she wants to drop into. And they said she was looking at some incredibly crazy lines, and they were just, like, in awe. They were like, holy crap. And that was it. Then they said goodbye to her. She went flying, you know, she went skiing away. But it was pretty interesting to see that that's what people do.
Yeah, she's a total badass. We were just watching a couple of her runs from the Paradise Waits video that we watched last year. And yeah, she's just an incredible skier. She's so awesome.
She was looking at one drop, and I forgot the name of it, but they said it goes down, and she was explaining it to them. She's like, "Yeah, it gets a little tight in there. You could do one or two turns in the chute, but then it gets so narrow you can barely fit your skis through. So you just have to kind of go straight, and then you could do another few turns, and then you hit the drop off the cliff, and it's probably about a 40-foot drop." And they're like looking at her like, holy moly.
They're like, that's it?
Yeah.
Yeah, we were looking it up. And
these guys are pretty hardcore skiers, but they're like that. They were like in awe. They were like, that's a crazy line she was looking at.
Yeah, and that's where something like a Fat Maps that we talked about before, and then we, you know, talked to Adam from Fat Maps back in December. They show the crevasse zones, the avalanche areas. And they have good descriptions of all the terrain there. And we were looking at it. I forget the name of the run. But, yeah, it was like a 60-degree?
Yeah, it was like a 60-something.
Pitch or something on the trail. I mean, just crazy.
It was nuts. I'll tell you in a sec which one. Because I remember just looking at the face. And they had a picture of it because they were skiing alongside of it. They didn't ski that face. Mm-hmm. And they were just like, it was absolutely incredible. It was.
Yeah, they were showing the pictures of it. I think it was a 60-degree pitch or something. Fat Maps is we used that a bunch while we were out there. And that app worked so great. I mean, they do an awesome job, you know, showing you where the different trails are, how to get to the trails, a nice little description about them. Just really, really helpful in, you know, if you're looking to hit a particular trail or particular run, and if you need some tips on the weather or the conditions.
See, I think these guys did Pucker Face, and right next to it, I think it was Central Couloir. Mm-hmm. 62-degree drop. And I think that's the line she was looking at, and they were just like, holy moly. And these guys did, I mean, Pucker Face is a nice open, but it's still a 47 degree.
Mm-hmm.
So they're, you know, they're not crap skiers. They hiked up there too, like a while. So that was, then they're on the back side of that, they were talking about, they'd never done it, but they've skied Jackson before. So they kind of knew where they were going.
Mm-hmm.
And on the back of the Cody Bowl, there's that once is enough.
Yeah.
63-degree incline. And they said the problem with that is you go down and you have to be careful because if there's people below you, it's very easy to cause an avalanche there. And you don't want to bury the person that just skied down.
Yeah, it's kind of a dick move.
So you kind of have to watch out. But it looks, that's another one that looks like crazy. But yeah, those guys were all over those balls and stuff, and it's just like, wow, you're in the middle of nowhere too.
Yeah, I mean,
there's just miles of trail.
The terrain, I guess, like we said, the terrain is so vast and so dynamite and so awesome that you I don't know how you could ever be bored of this mountain.
Yeah, well, I gotta say, so on the regular map that they have for the resort, they kind of list the bowls, but they don't list the backcountry runs. Fat Map has the backcountry runs listed, which is pretty awesome. So it lists it. It tells you the degree of difficulty, and it, like, because everything's basically backcountry. They have like extreme and extremely difficult, which mm-hmm. are like, they give you the skull and crossbone to tell you, like, you know, and they have a different color to it. Like, one's purple. That's the one that's like really crazy, and then the yellow ones are just regular, you know, really hard backcountry lines. So it's really cool because they show you the terrain and they show you, well, if you want to stay in what's quote-unquote a run, backcountry run, like here's the area and you can click on it and it'll tell you a little bit about that, which is really nice about FatMap.
Yeah, they do an awesome job. So what would you say your favorite trails on the mountain were?
So my favorite trails, and we hit this probably for about 2 days, was the Washakie Glades under the Teton Lift.
Yes.
Between the bumps that were along the side of that and then the glades themselves, that was a lot of fun. We pounded that. And then the Laramie Bowl, just playing in the Laramie Bowl all.
We almost wore ourselves out on those, just those runs, hitting them over and over again those first 2 days.
Well, the whole thing with the Laramie Bowl, so we got, I think it that was a one day, Sunday, it had probably like six or seven inches at night. So then that Monday when we came to the mountain, it was just like, we got to hit the ball. So we hit the ball, and it was just beautiful. It was like fresh snow. I think everything was either groomed out or had been wind-blown out, and everything was just great. So everything bumped up nicely, and it was easy to do. And then we started jumping in the trees. So the Laramie Bowl is really nice because they'll usually groom like one, like right down the middle, they'll groom. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of intermediate or, you know, advanced intermediate. And then everything else on the side, they leave ungroomed and it all bumps up and it's really nice.
Yeah, there was the Washakie Glade, and then right next to it too was the Grizzly Glade. And they kind of came together.
Yeah.
And there were two trails, but they all kind of blended together and you could, again, like kind of choose your own adventure in there.
Yeah.
And then underneath that Teton Lift, there was a bunch of great little moguls at the bottom, too.
We were just so happy right to have size. Snow. Oh, it was like real so snow. Nice.
Yeah, that...
How about you? What was your favorite?
The Laramie Bowl, too, was one of my favorites. That was awesome, too, because the shape of it, too, if you're at the top, you're looking down, so you're kind of like skiers right. It was really steep going in. And then if you looked skiers left, it was a little more gradual. So you can kind of choose... Kind of, again, choose your own adventure, how you want to go in. And you stay on the skier's right side, you could find different chutes, you could find more bigger bumps, you can go up into the trees. Again, it was a lot of variety, and the bowl was so big.
It was intimidating at first, but then you start looking and skiing a little bit. You're like, all right, I could break this up now. I'll do this, and then I'll jump into the side here, go into these trees, and then come out. And it was just like 10 runs in one, you know what I mean, which we're not used to because we're not skiing bowls every day.
Yeah, a lot of fun. It was again like choose your own adventure. You could every single time you could do a different section of it and have it always be different.
Yeah.
So that one, and you know what? I like the tent sleep into amphitheater. So that same lift over there by the Laramie Bowl, the
Thunder,
the Surrogate, the hell is the name of that
Sublet?
Sublet.
Yeah. Well, Sublet's on the left side of the bowl.
Right.
And then if you take, I think it was it Thunder you take up? And that's on the right side.
Well, you can take Sublet, and you got off to the right, and you could kind of traverse around to the Ten Sleep Bowl,
right,
which takes you into Amphitheater.
Yeah.
And now Amphitheater is kind of underneath the Thunder Ridge chair, and there's all kinds of awesome
underneath
moguls.
Corbett's. You can watch Corbett's from there.
You can watch Corbett's. That's where we saw the guy slide hundreds of feet.
Yeah.
And you drop in, and there's some, you know, it's a nice bowl there, and then that... Amphitheater, there's all these great tree runs in there that we did, and moguls, and again, very wide, completely different terrain.
Well, we hit that the last 2 days, and I was like, I didn't even realize that was there.
Yeah.
And then we skied it like the second time we skied it, we started like jumping off to the sides, jumping in trees. I was like, I didn't realize all this was here. This is pretty cool. It's not just it's because amphitheater is almost like a half pipe shaped run.
Mm-hmm.
But then you start jumping off into
it's like a stuff. Super wide blue.
Yeah.
But if you go off to the sides, there's all kinds of cool stuff to play in.
Yeah.
Big bumps and rocks and little jumps, and it was, yeah, really nice terrain.
It was kind of cool, yeah. That was a surprise. You know, it just shows you got to definitely explore, like, everything.
You really do need probably 2 to 3 weeks to really get the whole mountain. You know, taking a couple days off here and there because you will... wear yourself out if you're not used to this.
Well, it depends on the weather, too, because we had a friend that told us Hobax was great. Now, Hobax is under the whatever's to the left of Laramie Bowl, the other bowl, Under that is Hobax, and it's all black runs, and it's a pretty decent terrain.
Wide open, kind of bowl-like.
Bowl-like, yeah.
Trees.
But when we went, it was very icy because they were having the, you know, thaw and then freeze at night. We also did all the way on the other side of the mountain, the Saratoga Bowl. That was all chunky ice. So it's kind of like if it was nice, if it was good conditions, those probably would be pretty sweet to do too.
With some fresh powder, that'd be great. But yeah, the conditions, like I said, just weren't right for it. We did it a couple times.
It's such a big mountain, it'll drive you to certain areas.
Yeah, another run that we did one time that was, our timing was probably perfect, was that Rollins Bowl.
Oh, that was great.
Where we kind of dropped in underneath that lift and just,
we're just like flying down.
Everybody was traversing, like, you know what? We're like, fuck this traverse. Like, let's just jump into this.
Yeah.
You know, and it's super steep at top and then it kind of mellows out a bit. But yeah, again, it's so wide and you can kind of, again, choose your own adventure, choose what you want to go around. And we just started just bombing down at the end. It was fantastic.
We were careful, you know, like we see something that we don't recognize, a drop off, we can't see beyond something, we'd stop and kind of creep up to it and be like, okay, we got to go around this or we can jump out, you know, kind of stuff.
Plus, too, it was exhausting. Yeah. You know, these runs are so long and we're used to our, what's Killington, 2,000 vertical?
And how with the altitude?
The altitude, yes. Yeah. The amount of vertical and the altitude and the steepness. I mean, you really do work while you're out there.
Yeah.
But it's so much fun.
Oh, yeah.
It's a blast.
Well, top of Laramie Bowl is what, 10,000 feet?
A little over 10,000,
10,050 or something like that. That wasn't bad. It was better than Telluride. Telluride killed me. The altitude in Telluride was even worse.
Yeah. Yeah, Telluride's, well, I mean, you're at 8,000 at the base in Telluride. Yeah. 10,450 at top of Rendezvous. It does not have a number at top of Sublet, but about 10,050. Sounds about right.
Wow. Now, the other cool thing you're going to notice about the mountain, just skiing around, you're going to see there. It's such an advanced mountain, and TGR is around, so you know there's pros around. You're going to see some crazy, amazing skiers and boarders that are just doing ridiculous shit on the mountain. And every once in a while, you're just going to stop and be like, holy crap, did you see that? You know?
Yeah.
We were on the lift, and these two guys are flying through amphitheater. And we're like, oh, they're just cruising around, just like, you know, nice, making lines. And all of a sudden, they go up one of the sides of one of the banks. And there's this jump that was made up there. And then one dude flies off and does like a spin. And we're like, holy shit. And then we're like, okay, now we got to watch his friend go. And his friend goes and bombs, you know, another massive aerial. We're like, holy crap. It's awesome. Yep.
You will encounter some of the best skiers you're ever going to see.
Yeah.
Out there.
You see people just ripping down this terrain. Just like, wow, really. There were three people that did Corbett's, one in a row, all in a row. Remember we were on the lift?
Yeah.
And we saw them just going like, you know, spaced apart. And they just jumped right in. I was like, that's how, making it look easy. Yeah.
Making it look easy. Yep. Yeah. It's a badass mountain. Where would you rate this among your top mountains that you've skied at?
I would, it's got to be between this and Telluride, but I would say this is probably the most difficult mountain overall because of the amount of terrain and the advanced terrain and the backcountry. It's incredible.
Yeah, I don't disagree one bit. It's absolutely fantastic. I would put it at the top, I think, of my list.
Yeah.
Of places to ski. You know, the town is great. The people are awesome. The terrain is insane. It's just a fantastic place. If you're in a, you know, advanced skier, plus another one thing that's really nice about it, the airport is like 15 minutes from the mountain.
Yeah, that was really great.
Because Telluride's a pain in the ass to get to, which makes it less crowded, which is nice.
There's no lines ever at Telluride.
And there's weed in Telluride.
That's true.
But I think, you know, just for ease of travel and
places that we've skied. Like, so, okay, I don't know. There's different ratings that I'd have, like ease and terrain. Terrain is, like, number one.
Yeah.
Ease and I'd say it's also number one for the places I've been. But you said Utah's pretty good, too.
Oh, Snowbird and Alta are dynamite, too.
Yeah.
Again, too, there's not much there. When you're there to ski. There isn't a lot of vapor. There isn't a lot of restaurants. There is what is there, and you're there to ski pretty much.
But then when you're talking about overall experience, I got to go back to Zermatt.
It's a different world, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, because you got that culture, you got the experience of the après, and the mountain was pretty impressive. I mean, that was a lot of terrain they had there, too.
Oh, yeah.
But
North America?
North America. We're going to have different ratings.
Well, then you got Whistler then. Whistler's in the mix too. Whistler's absolute dynamite as well.
That's North America.
Yeah.
So then we got to have a European rating. We're going to have a bracket for this. We're going to bracket this off.
I heard a bracket. Someone said bracket. March Madness.
Oh, this weekend at the ski house.
March Madness.
Well, we did the best villains. I don't know
best
if everybody.
Villains.
We did post that. I posted the bracket too.
What number episode was that? It had to be like 40.
I don't know. That was fun to do while we were skiing.
That was awesome.
Yeah. I think it was a crap day out, so we're like, let's just do a bracket. And
we did a bracket.
Then we did the
most evil person ever.
Well, the funniest thing is we just started making a list talking about like who the best villain is. So we got to do that with best skiers.
I think so, yeah.
And we'll go from all the little ones to the big ones.
Mountain Creek will be in there.
Mountain Creek.
Yeah.
Mountain Creek. Hey, if you're a snowboarder and you like doing terrain parks, Mountain Creek is pretty dope.
That's true. And you get a season pass for like, what, $400?
Yeah.
As a student, probably $200.
And if you're an expert skier, you're probably going to be a little bit disappointed, but you're probably not going to go there, you know?
Yes.
So it's kind of...
So Jackson Hole, definitely thumbs up from both of us, I think. Fantastic skiing. It's a fantastic town. A little expensive, but, you know, when you're all highfalutin and baller, that's not a problem.
Well, the funniest thing I noticed about this trip was... I looked around, you know, we had talked about this, like, it wasn't like the normal party crew from the ski club, because, I mean, our ski club's huge, so usually you get a big trip like that, you get, like, a good amount of party people that just want to party their ass off and ski, you know, good amount, whereas this was all hardcore, like, I can't even drink, I'm waiting to backcountry tomorrow and shit like that. It was crazy.
Yeah, yeah. There was a lot more of that, definitely, than Austria, where it was party first, drink, ski second.
Yeah, and people were just exhausted, like, you know, 10 o'clock, people are starting to like just, you know, leave the bar, just like sneak off out of the bar. Like, I'm just tired.
Irish goodbye.
Yeah, exactly. And then near the end of the week, of course, everybody's rallying like, oh, it's, you know, it's the end of our vacation.
I mean, the mountain, it crushes you. It really makes you work. The altitude, everything.
Yeah, it crushes you.
It's a beautiful, dynamite place.
It's a good tired, though. It's a very good tired.
Very good tired.
I feel healthier now.
It was one of those places, though, you need a vacation from the vacation because you hit it so hard. Your body's just decimated after.
Yeah, but in a good way.
In a great way.
Oh, and then some of the people from our club skied Grand Targhee, mm-hmm. So that was great.
Yeah.
A lot of good snow. And then you're right by Yellowstone, so.
Yeah, some people did that snowmobile tour into there and saw moose and bison up close.
Yeah.
One of our pals, Harry, almost got attacked by a bison.
He almost got run over. That was, going to ask him if he let
That's
us post
video
the video.
Footage, yeah.
Because that thing was coming towards him. That was.
It's coming right for us.
All right, for us. Everybody run.
Yeah, so if you guys, we'll post all of our information links on the website. You can check it out. And if you have any other tips or anything else you want to add to it, let us know. SkiBumPodcast.com. And that's where all of our social media links and everything are. Or email us at SkiBumPodcast@gmail.com.
Hoo-ah! Bazinga.
You know what that music means. It's time for Around the Horn.
Around the Horn.
First up, so our friends in Vermont. Vermont Senate approves legal pot as governor cheers. So last week, the Vermont Senate approved a bill that would legalize marijuana for recreational use in that state, authorizing the licensing and regulation of commercial producers and retailers. So they passed it 17-12 last week, which means the next step is that the House of Representatives, that's where it's going next.
So state Senate, state House?
Yes.
All at the state?
Yep. So the state Senate has already approved it.
Nice.
17-12. That would allow adults 21 or older to possess up to an ounce of marijuana. They're saying right now they won't include edibles, and you won't be able to grow your own. But you can purchase it legally.
Oh, okay. And it won't include edibles. So you can just purchase smokable.
Edibles. Smokable, vapable. Exactly, yeah.
All right. That works.
And that would
it's
start
something.
That would start in January of 2018.
Yeah, the edibles are tough, I guess, to regulate because you never know what the people put in.
Yeah, I mean, they are starting to kind of figure it out in Colorado.
But if you have a drink and you put edible, you put like punch in there, mm-hmm. Nobody's going to know. You could walk around a concert with it. You know what I mean? I think that's what they're worried about.
You know, it's all about the children. We're worried about what's going to happen to the children. Yeah. And yes, you know, marijuana is not the best thing for kids. But as 21-year-olds, as adults, you should have a little more freedom in what you put into your own body. I mean, you can go to pretty much any store, any restaurant, and drink freaking tequila till you pass out.
Well, it's like saying, right, but it's like saying this is, you know, you can't have alcohol in this area. Mm-hmm. So they want to try to limit the weed because they could always tell if you're smoking or vaping, generally.
Sometimes. Not always.
Not always.
Yeah. So this is going to the Senate, I think in the middle of March, it said. And again, if that gets approved, then it's to go to the governor, Governor Peter Shumlin, who said he's going to sign it.
Wow.
So this could happen the next 2 weeks.
Feel the burn.
Feel the burn. Yeah. So this is big news. And the other states that have legalized recreational marijuana, that's all been done through a regular vote. The way Vermont's laws are set up, it has to go through the state legislature and not go to the popular vote.
Oh.
So this is the way. This would be the first state that's done it that way.
And they have to because of their constitution is.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so exciting news for our friends in Vermont. And we noticed, too, you know, when
it's a big step.
It's a huge step. They were the first state to legalize gay marriage, too. So Vermont's always kind of on the precipice of change.
Like East Coast California.
More or less. Yeah, right? A compact, less populated, landlocked California.
With hopefully a lot more snow coming.
Hopefully a lot more snow coming. It's still early.
Yeah.
Right?
Still early.
So, yeah, we noticed in Killington back in December, they added their first vape shop. So, you know, the person who's running that place is just ready to buy a yacht, perhaps?
All the vape shops are just placeholders for when weed becomes legal. I mean, pretty you see them much. All over here, like, you know, with funny, cool names. And it's like, you know, I guess they've also created a market for vaping regular cigarettes and, you know, just
tobacco. And like different flavored smoke. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is good for people that are trying to get off of cigarettes. They can go to the vaping, which I know a lot of people, my brother, I know a lot of friends that are doing that. Mm-hmm. And it helps them get away from tobacco, you know. I mean, my brother, he'll still smoke a cigarette once in a while, but he was smoking like a pack and a half a day, pack a day.
Oof, yeah.
Which now, because he's doing the vaping, he only does like maybe a few cigarettes a week.
Oh, that's great,
which
yeah.
Which is a lot better.
And all the tar and the carcinogens, you don't get any of that stuff. You get more of just the nicotine, the tobacco.
Exactly. But they've made a market for that, and now it's the placeholder for waiting for the weed to become legal.
Pretty much, yeah.
That's the new head shop, you know?
Yeah.
We're already set up.
It's coming.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right, next up, we got some crazy-ass story about there. There's a mummified body of an explorer found sitting at a desk on a drifting yacht.
Oh, that's so weird.
It just sounds like a punchline for a joke, right? Or like a joke setup or something.
Yeah.
Some fishermen in the Philippines this past Friday, discovered a yacht containing the mummified body of a missing German adventurer. So they, you know, the story goes on to say they found this. It was like a ghost ship just wash up. And I've heard... Somebody did a story, I think it was like ABC or Dateline. One of them did this whole story on ghost ships, and they said it's pretty common. Like, these ships will just float up, and it's like they've been floating for years, you know? So apparently they identified him with documents that were aboard the boat, and they have a picture of him in this article, which is pretty grisly if you're not into the, you know, if you don't want to see it, don't scroll all the way to the bottom.
Oh, it's so creepy.
But the picture is weird. It almost looks like something from a movie where somebody's been like freeze-dried, like they sucked the life out of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy stuff. So they're speculating that, I guess the mast on the ship was broken, so they're saying that's why it was immobilized. And they don't know, they're speculating that he probably had a heart attack and died, and then the mast snapped. Because he had the radio in his hand and he slumped over the desk. So they're thinking he was trying to call for help and had, you know, like a heart attack or something and died. And it's just creepy looking. Very creepy. And can you imagine that? Like, you see a ghost ship and you're like, oh, a ghost ship. I wonder what's going on. You go on and there's like a skeleton dried out guy. Looks like something from Raiders of the Lost Ark or something. It's crazy.
Yeah, it looks almost... it's like some sort of coating is on him or something. I mean,
it's like dried leather.
Yeah.
Think about it. He's been at sea with the salt,
mm-hmm.
bacon in the sun,
it's pretty
probably
much cured.
He's like beef jerky.
Yeah.
It's man jerky. Sick to say, but that's what happens when people mummify. They turn it like jerky. It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, you see his hair, you see his beard, He's just kind of slumped there. Yeah, like you said, with the radio there, it looks like he almost could be alive still.
It is freaking spooky.
It's really, really spooky. Like
Pirates of the Caribbean spooky.
Yeah, it's really creepy. I mean, I guess he was last seen in 2009.
Yeah, so he's been missing for a while.
Like 6 years? Seven years?
Yeah, I think they said in the article his wife, he left his wife. Not left his wife, but like his wife was one of the last people to see him. And 2009, he had broken up with his wife who traveled with him the year before. She since died from cancer. And then a fellow sailor said that they saw him in 2009 sailing. So they said he was an experienced sailor. That's just crazy stuff, man.
Yeah.
I don't know how you even identify the body. If you don't have, I guess if you have dental records, you could probably identify the...
Well, I guess, too, if you're on the ship, you know, it might be, like, registered to him or licensed to him or, hey, an ID on him there.
Well, that's what they're saying. They had document, like, ID probably had passport or whatever. But still, you want to verify the actual body.
Yeah.
Because you never know. It could be a plant to fake your own death. If I hit the Powerball, that's what I'd do. I'd get the money and just fake my own death and disappear.
It's not a bad move. If you win Powerball, you could pick up one of these things. That's our next story. Boom. The just announced, well, officially unveiled today, the new Bugatti Chiron.
Bugatti.
Bugatti. Girl walks up to me, says, "What do you drive?" I said, "Bugatti." Yeah, so the Bugatti Chiron, it was just unveiled at the Geneva Auto Show today.
So we talked about this before, but what did we have? They announced
that it was going to come out.
Right.
But this is when they finally...
And they had like an artist rendering, but they didn't have the actual car, right?
Exactly, yeah. So today at the auto show, they finally put on display this car. And I'll be honest.
Badass.
The Veyron, I always thought was... I mean, it was very purposeful and it was amazing for what it was, but I always found it really ugly.
This one
looks badass.
It's like all curved lines. It looks really like...
There's not a flat surface on this car, I don't think.
It looks very natural, like with the curves. It looks really nice.
It looks really good. It has those like weird laser LED lights too.
It's a goddamn James Bond car if I ever saw one.
Yeah, so this thing is going to be coming out. I don't know. It doesn't to say when it will actually be available for sale and to pick up, but...
1,500 horsepower.
1,500 horsepower coming from a quadruple turbocharged 8-liter W16 engine.
Price of gas went down. Let's start burning that shit up.
It's pretty much four four-cylinder turbos connected together.
Damn.
Yeah. 0 to 60 time, or 0 to 62 time, which is 100 kilometers, in under 2.5 seconds. Top speed, 261 miles per hour.
Wow.
7-speed dual clutch gearbox, multi-plate clutch, 4-wheel drive system, and carbon fiber monocoque.
Wow. I mean, the thing looks badass, but they show the interior. It looks so fucking nice.
Yeah, just like futuristic, like contour, and crazy. And,
yeah.
Yeah, the color they use in the display is blue. Like this really like deep like blue, and it just looks perfect on that car.
It's two-tone too. It looks nice.
And I was looking at another article on, I forget which site it was, but they actually turned the car on. They fired it up.
Nice.
It just sounds like just heaven and hell kind of in harmony together. It's unreal. It's just nasty sounding.
That's crazy.
So, yeah. So, you know what I think we're going to have to do? Pick one of these up. Fit it with those off-road tank treads.
Yeah. Well,
imagine that.
I can't pick one of those up unless I know, do the doors go like this, or do they regular doors?
No, the doors go like this.
I can't like get it this. Then.
Mm.
You need the fancy doors.
It does have rather bourgeois doors. So they're only making 500 of these the first year, and they are going to go
490.
You know, let's not be greedy. Okay. Just I think 10. 10 is enough.
10? Just yeah. 10 of them.
I mean,
corner the market on it. We could corner the market and then sell them for triple.
What are we, the Dukes?
That's what I'm saying.
What are we, the Dukes?
The Dukes.
Frozen concentrated orange juice.
Corner the market on the Bugattis. We'll have to buy under shell names, and then we'll jack the price up double, and then sell, have the big sell-off.
So they're going for a relatively reasonable $2.6 million apiece.
Easy. I mean, if they had 600, you'd buy 600. I mean, that's what you do.
That's what you do, right? I mean, Costco sells them by the six-pack, don't they?
You watch that Billions, right?
That's Billions. What you do. Billions, yeah.
What's the use of having fuck you money if you can't say fuck you?
Truer words have never been spoken. So, yeah, Bugatti's going for $2.6 million. I think they said like a third of them have already been pre-ordered. So
if you get that car, though, you got to get the matching outfit. All one-piece leather to match.
Just all leather.
Bugatti on everything. Just Bugatti keys, Bugatti
always
gloves.
Sunglasses, you know?
You got the crazy European sunglasses, the Bugatti sunglasses.
I think more spandex than leather.
It's got to go all the way down to the underwear.
But like a leather spandex and a hybrid cloth.
If you buy that car, they'll make you one. They'll make you one out of the interior. That would be cool. You get out of the interior, and you're wearing the interior leather.
So it'd be like camouflage, so like they wouldn't see you in there?
You're in there like, I don't know who's driving that car. All Bugatti.
All Bugatti. All the time.
That would be pretty cool. I wonder if you get to pick out like your cows for the seats. Like, I want that one and that one.
Yeah, you probably can.
Probably good.
Probably choose what animal you want the seats made out of.
Emu.
You could have human if you wanted.
Nah. I don't like, you know, the people smelling.
I'm not saying you particular. I'm just saying the royal you could choose to have human leather seats.
It's like a Jeffrey Dahmer if he was rich.
Mummy guy from the yacht.
Oh.
Mummy guy yacht seats. Oh, that would be a super limited edition. It probably adds at least 10% of value to the car.
Well, after we corner the market, then we'll fit them out with all this crazy stuff. How about giraffe? I want giraffe seats.
Master P's got a gold toilet. Why can't you have human leather seats in your car?
How about a gold Bugatti? How about a chrome Bugatti?
Chromed out.
If that was chromed out, put a wrap on it.
It would also weigh...
Highfalutin ski bum wrap on it.
Oh, that'd be so dope. That would actually probably add a lot of weight to it, too, the chrome, unfortunately. The wrap we could do.
Driving chrome in Jersey, wrap. I don't think I'm going that fast. I think I'm going 80, maybe.
Yeah.
Until I hit somebody.
But in Wyoming.
But in Wyoming.
If you're in Jackson Hole.
Montana.
Montana.
It's right there.
Do it.
It's brown.
Yep. So Bugatti. Pick it up.
Is that four-wheel drive?
All-wheel drive, yeah.
Bam! We can take that ski and that's throw a rock on that bitch.
That's why I'm saying get the tank treads for it.
Yeah.
For the wintertime.
All-wheel drive in that thing.
Boom.
And you can wear that leather suit all year round. You could ski in that.
Yes.
Bugatti skis.
Bugatti and Bogner together.
Bugatti and Bogner. It's got to be a marriage made in heaven.
Totally.
You're going to have to get... I wonder if they make Oakley Bugatti goggles.
They have Oakley Ducati.
Ooh. Just change the T to a B. Get it made in China and it'll be like a Bugatti.
Right?
They wouldn't even know.
They can totally hook that up.
Cool.
All right. So you got one more story left.
Round this out. Happening right now, probably at this very moment.
Right now?
Right now.
Right now, as we're recording.
So today is Tuesday. What's today's date?
It's the first of the month.
First of the month. God damn, I got to drop my rent check off.
We're going to Sizzler.
Sizzler. So astronaut Scott Kelly from Orange, New Jersey, is returning from a year in space.
Wow.
A damn year. So he's 52-year-old NASA astronaut. Today, him and another Russian cosmonaut are returning from 340 straight days being in space.
So is cosmonaut just the Russian word for astronaut?
I think so, pretty much.
Okay.
The messed up part is, I think there's that dude that's still eating Chipotle every day. He's probably up to 340 days, too.
Oh, dude, is that guy... Oh, what if the guy got E. coli and he stopped eating it?
I don't know. What if the Russian and American astronauts up there for 340 days ate just Chipotle?
Oof.
That would be bad news. But anyway, so
he's... You mean that close of quarters with someone who ate Chipotle every day?
Oh, I'm sorry, guys. We messed up the shipment, so we sent you up with just a bunch of chili.
Thanks, Dick.
Thanks, Dick. Remember that joke we played on those those astronauts?
It's all Chipotle.
It's all Chipotle. So they started returning, with their orbit and the way they have to hit the windows to come in. Everything started about 4:15 Eastern time, and then the deorbit and landing coverage they're covering on NASA's television. Now, I don't know what cable channel that is. It's probably another pay channel that you got to get, some other space package or something with the way the cable company works. But it was going to begin at 10:15, so it's 11 o'clock now. they might be down eating Chipotle. Or Brian, what do they do when they usually come back? Go through customs.
Go through customs. It takes forever to get through customs.
Do you have anything to declare? Yes. Have some plutonium.
Got some moon rocks.
Moon rocks.
Some leftover Chipotle.
Leftover. I got a bag of leftover Chipotle. Yeah, so that's going to be pretty interesting to see the shakeout for that. I'm sure he's going to do a lot of interviews, and it's going to bring back the We Have to Get to Mars. M-A-R-S. I want to know what candidate is for Mars and for weed. Those are two things I care about.
Yeah. Mars and weed are the important things, I think, in this election.
At least you just grow weed on Mars. It would be the weed planet.
Special Martian weed.
Turn the red planet to the green planet. Boom. Boom, I said it.
I mean, where do you go from there?
Well, it grows pretty quickly. You want to terraform Mars. You got to start growing plants on there. You grow weed. It grows quick. Matures in like 6 weeks.
I can't even argue with that. That makes perfect sense to me.
Makes perfect sense.
I'm for it.
It wouldn't freeze out like in the Martian with the potatoes. Potatoes, they don't have the juice.
No.
You talking weed? Boom. That's not freezing out because everything's chill already.
Turning the red planet green.
Red planet to the green planet.
I like it.
Right. So I think that's...
I think we have to end on that note. I mean, where do you go from there?
Red to green. That's
red to green. No yellow.
It's like a red light to a green light.
Stop to go.
Boom.
For show.
For show. The blue planet.
All right. So thank you guys so much for listening. You can hit us up at skibumpodcast.com, twitter.com/skibumpodcast, instagram.com/skibumpodcast, and facebook.com/skibumpodcast. And we will talk to you guys again next week.
Stay high, stay blue.
Bye-bye.